Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No. They're going to teabag fight instead.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's The Session. My name is JP, and we are here to bring you some good beer information. Today's guests are the boys from Kansas Territory Brewing Company, Brandon and Kurt. Fellas, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
And you're sounding and looking very good, very high quality. You almost like you're in a professional recording studio. What's your deal there? You guys do a bunch of OnlyFans content, or what's up?
Absolutely. We're here at our local homebrew shop in Manhattan, Kansas. It's Brew Bros Hops and Sprockets, and this is their practice room for their bands. They're both in a band, so we got to give a big shout out to Terror Tractor and Bikini Gordo, because they're the ones that got us where we are.
Terror Tractor, is that the name of the band?
It is.
Oh yeah,
it is.
What kind of music is Terror Tractor? Because I have
Terror Tractor is definitely metal.
Okay, like farm themed, like
the smooth jazz,
like the Steel Panther of metal, or what's going on?
Well, they just do a little bit of everything. They've been around. Okay. I don't know, Aaron. You would know better than me. How long have they been around?
Since 1999.
Yeah, they started in 1999.
Oh, so wow, that is some old shit.
They have been around for a while. They've had some band members come in and out.
Sure.
But yeah, they're a lot of fun.
Okay, Terror Tractor, everyone, check them out. And then what was the name of the shop again?
It's Brew Bros Hops and Sprockets. They sell homebrew supplies, and then they also work on bicycles and sell bikes. So.
Oh, nice. That's a cool little combo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice, man. Is Kansas a big, you know, sort of bike state?
I think it has gotten more and more so. Okay. A lot of gravel rallies and stuff like that, but we still have some road bikes that are running around. There's a big Bike Across Kansas event that happens every year.
The Dirty Kanza. That's a big one.
The Dirty Kanza. That sounds like a lot. That sounds like another band that would back up Terror Tractor.
It should be.
I mean, honestly, that's cool. I mean, you know, but the picture I have in my head of Kansas is that it's just a flat as a board. So riding your bike across it just sort of seems easy. Are both of those things true?
I have not ridden my bike across the state. Okay. I will tell you that Western Kansas is pretty flat, but we're kind of in the northeast corner. And so we're in the Flint Hills. And so we have a little bit of, I mean, certainly don't have any mountains or anything like that.
No,
otherwise Flint Hills is kind of like the Ozarks without any trees.
Okay.
Yeah.
Otherwise it'd be the Flint Mountains.
Yeah. That's right.
I mean, the Flint Hills are named hills for a reason, I suppose.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, why don't we start with your guys' little history in brewing? I don't know whichever you want to go first, but I would love to know how you both got started in brewing. Were you guys home brewing beforehand? You guys home brewers coming up?
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
You can start.
So I started, most people don't believe me when I tell them, but I drank my first beer when I was 21 years old.
See, because I started at 19, and I get sort of the same thing. But 21, right. I feel, is like, I don't believe you either.
When I was 10 years old, my dad bet me $1,000 that I would drink a beer before I turned 21. And I took him up on it. And I think I saved more than $1,000 in college not drinking before I turned 21.
Right.
But, yeah, that was the very first beer I drank. And the Christmas after my birthday's in July, okay, he bought me a homebrew kit.
Because you were that into it.
Yeah. So I got really into it, started home brewing, and then just reading every book I could get my hands on. When I did most of my research, I was actually a conductor on the railroad. And so I was working for Union Pacific. And there's a lot of downtime when you're on the railroad. And so a lot of time to sit and read a book. And so I just kept reading, kept brewing every time I got home. Was volunteering at a local brewery, and they ended up offering me a job. So that was kind of my way of getting in.
There's a lot going on. So I want to go back to the bet, because there's a lot of things just even with the initiation of the bet, right? Like, there's not many dads that I know that would put up that kind of money. Did he pay you?
He did.
He did. Okay.
He did. So my very first beer, we were actually on the lake fishing at 7 o'clock in the morning on my birthday, and he tossed me a Busch Light and said, "I guess this is as good a time as any."
That
and
sounds
then I got
like
the check when we got off the boat.
That sounds like the classic dad maneuver.
Yeah.
You know, let's not really talk about it. Let's just be really gruff and manly about it. 7 in the morning, crack a Busch Light, and then just, you know, suddenly you're $1,000 richer, man.
Yep.
He got you a check. He didn't even give you in cash. I would have given it to you like an all $2 bill.
He should have.
Did you even know what $1,000 was when you were 10 years old? You're like, dude, I could buy a lot of RC cars.
I had no idea.
No. And you're just like, yeah, sure, beer, whatever.
That's a lot of candy.
Yeah, right? Did you cheat at all? I mean, you can tell us now.
I did not cheat at all.
You can tell us now.
I can honestly say that.
Was that hard? I don't know why I'm like so bent on this, but this just is, that's fascinating to me because you didn't, it's not like you didn't drink because you didn't like it or you didn't want to, or you just didn't have those friends or, you know, for whatever reason, but you had a bet. That seems like a very hard thing to, I don't know, man. I would have been like,
I think the big thing for me, the guys that I lived with when I was in college, they were all partiers.
Hell yeah.
And I saw them get stupid. And so I was like, yeah, this is easy. I don't want to do that.
Okay,
and
good. So you're smart.
I don't know about that, but
okay. So you were a train conductor.
I was.
You were. Yeah. Well, that is, you know, if I ever retire, and for some reason I find myself in LA, I would be a conductor on the Disneyland Railroad, because to me, that seems like such a rad job.
Yeah.
Just driving a little tiny train around, but like the big train, that's a lot of, do you have to go to school for that?
We definitely do some training, and the conductor doesn't actually drive the train. The engineer does. So we're there to assist the engineer.
Oh.
So a lot of what I was doing was the paperwork, making sure we were on the right track, throwing switches, stuff like that.
Reading books.
Yeah. So you're the secretary for the engineer.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. And that makes a lot. I just boiled your job down to make me meaningless.
That's it.
It's like, that's fine. That's rad. And so in the notes, you also were a school bus driver, which to me means the same thing, train conductor, school bus driver.
Right.
And you distributed racing fuel.
I did.
What does that even mean? You're like selling certain racing fuel to racetracks?
Yeah, we had.
That's wild.
I remember, like 50 different kinds of racing fuel. And I have never been a racing fan. It was just a job I found myself in. And so it was getting a hazmat license with a CDL that fortunately I already had because I drove a school bus.
Sure. Why wouldn't you have a hazmat license to drive a school bus?
Right.
It makes a lot of sense.
But yeah, I drive a flatbed around the state of Kansas and drop off drums of racing fuel in people's barns and stuff. So it was bizarre.
Kansas,
a weird work history.
Is that in Kansas? Because if so, that place seems fucking wild, dude. That just seems very weird to me. I don't know why.
So it's VP Racing Fuels, and they're still like the big sponsor of all the NHRA drag races and stuff like that. But
okay.
Yeah, one of the main locations is here in Kansas, so it's bizarre. I don't understand.
You're doing all this stuff while you're homebrewing. How's your homebrewing going? You love it. Fantastic. Yeah.
Fantastic. I loved it.
Was it good? Be honest. Because mine sucked shit. It was terrible.
So the first batch that I remember brewing was actually with a member of our church, and he invited me over to homebrew. Okay. And so I brewed with him, and then after that, I just started doing it on my own. The first batches were a little bit rough. One of my beers that I thought was the worst that I brewed was an IPA that it was overly sweet, and I ended up entering into a competition anyway, and it ended up getting a gold, and I still have no idea how that happened, but I guess I tried it beforehand, and I was like, this is not good beer. So I am glad that I was not judging that category if the rest of them were worse than it. So,
bro, yeah, that's the thing, man. Like small comps, you know, you can get a gold and your beer could be like a 32.
Right. Yep.
It just doesn't it doesn't matter at that point.
Yep.
So, overly sweet. Yeah, IPA. Love it.
And I'm not homebrewing a whole lot anymore. I continued to homebrew quite a bit when I was at my last brewery. But at this point, it gets a little tricky.
Yeah. Well, so how do you transition out of like a working environment, filing paperwork and doing all of the things? Because it sounds like your job, you just love paperwork, to go into opening a brewery, which is even more paperwork, and then eventually paperwork dies away. How do you shift into going, hey, you know what? I really love brewing. I want to make this my job.
Honestly, I was just, it was always a goal of mine to get into the brewing industry professionally. And so while I was volunteering for Tallgrass Brewing Company, they ended up having a position come open and just asked me. And I was like, absolutely. I'm leaving my job at the railroad. I'll make a third as much money, and I don't care because I'm going to be doing something I love. And I've just stuck with it since then.
That's sort of like, you know, why I like asking that question, because you would take a giant step down, maybe not giant necessarily, depending on what you were doing before, but a lot of people have made that transition and it's financially stupid.
Right. Yes, but absolutely.
Your passion means something at that point. So, you know, as long as you can swing it. So Tallgrass, so you're interning for Tallgrass, or were you, you know, how does that, what job did you have when you first got there?
So when I started there, I was volunteering leading tours before I got offered a job.
Okay.
The job they offered me was just a shift brewing position. And so I just started right away on the brew house. And
that's good. That's better than most people get when they first
enter the
scene, right? Usually you're washing kegs or something like that.
Scrubbing floors.
And so I worked there for about 2 years. They built a new facility on the other side of town that was a 50-barrel brew house with 150-barrel fermenters. But at the same time they were doing that, they opened up a 10-barrel brew pub in downtown Manhattan, Kansas. And they asked me to kind of take that facility over. So I got to be I hate the term brew master, but called me the brew master of that facility.
Okay.
And so that's kind of when I stopped homebrewing, because I got to homebrew on a 10-barrel system. I got to brew whatever I wanted to brew. And it was a blast.
Wow. That seems very, I don't know, maybe trusting isn't the right word, but it seems very confident. They were confident in you.
Yes.
You know, having no real commercial experience before that.
Yep. And I was very fortunate, and I think it also helped that the ownership of the company was still involved on the production side, but they also got to keep an eye on the brewpub side. And so they were in and out quite a bit and gave me a lot of help.
That's cool, man. So then what happens at Tallgrass?
So Tallgrass, their production facility ended up going under.
Oh, man.
And so I think they were in 17 states or something when they actually ended up going under. But the brew pub is still open.
Oh, okay.
And so
nice.
I ended up transitioning over to Kansas Territory Brewing Company 5 years ago. And when I started there, I started in sales, which Kurt is our sales director, and I am not a sales guy at all. I figured out I belong in a brewery, and that's it. And so But yeah, I did sales for a couple of years until our brewer left. And then I've been head brewer out at Kansas Territory ever since.
Okay. Nice. Nice. And Kurt, how long have you been with the company?
Let's see. I've been here for about 3 years now.
Okay.
Yeah. Before that, I had a brief stint at Firestone Walker. I worked there for a year managing three states in the Midwest. And before that, I did primarily wholesale for Miller Coors houses. So
okay.
I had about 13 years of craft brand manager experience managing brands from all over the United States and Miller Coors houses in Illinois. And then that moved me out to Kansas about 7 years ago now.
Wow. I guess I never really thought about sales managers moving like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so
wild.
Yeah. Man. I worked in Southern Illinois for about 5 years. And then a guy called me. It was one of my suppliers who worked for Stone Brewing Company. He said, "Hey, there's this wholesaler in Kansas that they need a craft brands manager. They only have like 6 or 7 craft beer brands and they want to build their portfolio." So came out, met with the guys and ran that division for about 5 years. So very successfully, we had a great time building up the craft brands in the state.
So, nice. So you've seen craft grow in the Midwest.
Oh yeah. Kansas, yeah. I was born right in the beginning of it. So very fortunate to do that. You know, I've been out to Sam Adams and went through the Beer Academy out there and, you know, done all the brewery tours across the West Coast, you know, just through their training programs and stuff. So yeah, it's been a wild ride, but yeah, you know, with everybody focusing on, you know, real hyper-local breweries and things like that, I think there was an opportunity, you know, Brad, who owns Kansas Territory, he was our number one local brand at the wholesaler I was working at. And I saw an opportunity for local craft lagers just to explode in the Midwest. So that's why we started talking and I came on board.
Yeah, the Midwest is very lager focused, which I'm very jealous of.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I appreciate you guys sent 3 lagers. And right. I was like, wow. I go, that's it? Then I go, that's it. That's all you need. Just give me lagers, man, so you guys know what's going on.
Yeah, about 97% of all beer sold in Kansas and in Missouri are domestic lagers. So that's kind of the iceberg that we're chipping away at.
Are you trying to get other styles out there in the market through, you know, have the lagers kick down the door and then maybe work in some ales or whatever? Or you're fine with lagers, but you want to take over the majority of that segment?
Right. Yeah. So if you look in the United States, there's regional lagers all across the board. You know, you have Rainier up in the Northwest. You have Lone Star down in Texas. You know, a lot of these have been gobbled up by Pabst or some of the big domestic brewery companies. But for some reason, in Kansas and Nebraska and even Missouri, there's really not that local domestic lager that people kind of fall back to.
Okay.
You know, and that's where we saw our future. So when I came on board, we were brewing 9 different beers, probably.
Yeah, we kind of did it the opposite of what you said. We had a bunch of beers, and then I've kind of narrowed it down to what has been successful.
Right.
Okay, that's an interesting growth strategy. Because, yeah, usually you try to, like, spread your wings a little bit and show people what they want, but it sounds like everybody already knows what they want.
Right, yeah. And if you boil down, you know, like, if you boil down beer, it's consumer packaged good industry, you know, and there's no other consumer packaged goods that goes to the consumer and says, hey, you shouldn't be drinking that because we think that this is better. And we kind of, we wanted to embrace the fact that there's a lot of light lager drinkers out there. You know, it's 97% of the beer sold in Kansas. And, you know, our craft industry is booming. I think whenever I came out here, there were 9 breweries and there's like 36 now. So we figured that rather than try to compete for that small 3% share of the pie, we would go after the 97%.
Well, and I think Brad probably said it best, our owner again. He kind of lives down a dirt road. He's 5 miles out off the highway. And he told us one day, he said, "You know what? I realized I've never seen an IPA can in the ditch," which is an interesting way to look at it. But he said, "Everything that I see out there is light lagers. And if that's what these people are drinking, that's what we're going to produce for them."
I mean, yeah, that does make a lot of sense because it's sort of like low-hanging fruit in a way.
Right.
You know, if you can produce a light lager, people are already drinking it, they're going to try yours, you know, no matter what, because you know the market's already there. But like he said, is the market there for an IPA? I've never seen litter, you know, in the IPA. Right, right. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
That's a bad way to gauge it, but
it really is.
Also kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it sort of speaks like to like, you know, the the local beer drinker, like, oh, we'll just put the can anywhere. And I know that's not right. What it is, but that is a good gauge of that too.
That's he said that
pretty
the,
smart.
The first time he saw a Life Coach can in the ditch, he took a picture of it and then he picked it up, but yeah. He did take a picture of it first.
And Life Coach is your lager that we're going to be drinking.
That's our flagship.
That's your flagship lager.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good segue. Why don't I crack it open?
Let's
hey,
do it.
There you go.
Confidently crafted. I like that. That's a good. It's a good tagline. All right. So
and
tell
the
me.
Suck it up. Tagline is always good on there too.
That's true. Tell me about Life Coach, man. What's the story behind this beer?
So again, there is a story behind every name of all of our beers. This was a pastor that Brad was friends with that decided to become a life coach, and Brad was talking to him over a beer and said, what exactly is a life coach? And the guy said, it's just somebody that listens to people's problems, tries to help them through them, kind of like a counselor, but not really. And so initially we tried to call, instead of the suck it up tagline, we tried to say counselor in a can, but the ABC wasn't down with that. And so
I can see that, man. You said that like that's right, great. Yeah. And then instantly I'm going, well, that's a lot of alcoholic, you know, talk.
Right.
So.
You can't attribute therapeutical properties to an alcoholic beverage. Brad told the guy, he goes, do you ever want to grab these guys by the shoulders, shake them and just tell them to suck it up? And that's where the tagline came from.
Yeah. Okay. So, I like it. I mean, it sort of just seems like what a pastor does anyways, except, you know, he doesn't have to give a sermon or whatever, right?
Correct, yeah.
Right.
Just do the same thing. Yeah, life coaches are weird, man. I worked with one once through an old job, and it was, like, weirdly, like, aggressive therapy. I don't know. It depends. I mean, everyone has their own like, take on it, but that's a cool business because it is sort of like a therapist, but they like, help you plan instead of ask you what you think you should do.
Yep.
It's a little and you don't have to go through any pesky training.
So when you came on, was this already an established brand?
Yes, Brandon, for both of us.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yep. It was just getting started when I came on. So I did a lot of pushing and doing tastings and stuff like that in some of the local regional areas anyway.
Okay. All right. And did you have to do any tweaks to it, or is it just the recipe that was there when you came on?
It's pretty similar. We've adjusted the hops a little bit.
Okay.
But other than that, and obviously this is not a hop forward beer by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. So what kind of adjustments did you make as far as?
So we started using, when I came in, we were using Vanguard, and I just adjusted that back to Hersbrucker. And so wanted a little of that German spice to it. But other than that, it's the same recipe it's been since the brewery started.
It's great.
Yeah,
that's a really good. What's this style? Just
standard American lager.
Standard American lager. Okay.
Yep.
So, what commercially would I compare this to in my brain, in my stupid brain? You know what I mean? Is it like a
just
like a Coors,
Pabst, Schlitz?
Yeah. Pabst. Okay. Yeah.
It is. It is a corn based. I mean, corn is the adjunct we use.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So,
I'm definitely getting that. I mean, it does taste like a PBR, but lighter. You know, PBR can sometimes be a little sweeter. It's definitely a little dried out.
Right.
Yeah, that's a very, very easy drinking. That's a very easy drinking lager. I mean, I could. Yeah, that's great. And yeah, there's no real hop character to speak of, which is obviously what you want, like you said. It's a very pleasant, sort of sweet corn aroma. The yeast esters are there. What kind of yeast do you use for this?
So we use Global. From Imperial.
Is that just like a standard
lager? Yeah, just kind of their standard lager. Okay. But we love the guys out at Imperial Yeast. They have done just an incredible job with their new facility and getting everything up and running, still maintaining consistency. So and their technical support is second to none. I mean,
oh, great.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, that's important to have for sure. Absolutely. So how do you take a style like this that is, like you guys have said, well established in the area, and chip away, Kurt, like you were saying, how do you chip away at that piece of market? with a beer like this? What do you do?
It's not as easy as you would think.
No, I can imagine not. But, it sounds really hard.
Yeah, it is sometimes. But honestly, you know, if you look at the wholesale network, you have your Miller Coors, Molson Coors now, and Anheuser-Busch houses. And, you know, in the state of Kansas, whenever we were brought on board, it was what they call a 3-2 state. So all beer was sold through independent liquor stores. And whenever you have a situation like that, the domestic beer guys can pretty much tell these liquor stores what to do. So whenever we walked into these liquor stores and we had a light domestic lager, a lot of them, they were doing backflips and they were like, this is fantastic. You know, we don't have to be kind of pushed around anymore or anything like that.
Wow.
And we were received very well. And I think that's why it took off from the start. I mean, whenever we took our focus away from what you would call traditional craft brands, and we cut our SKUs down from, I think we had 15 in total, and we cut them down to 3, our sales went up 200% the first year. So it essentially, we were just focused on a segment that no one's really focusing on, but that kind of drives the train. So it's a lot of feet in the street. I mean, you know, whenever you think of like Anheuser-Busch or Molson Coors, they have one sales rep that covers 3 or 4 states, and they don't, you know, they do some market time out in the market and things like that, but they're not doing regular tastings. Everybody knows what a Coors Light tastes like. So right. For us to come in and say, hey, we have this brand that you can make a little bit higher margin on, you know, we're local, it's going to be fresher. We're not going to dump a bunch of out of code beer on you. They were really receptive to that. So
we've also had a lot of success in the college markets. I mean, those have been our biggest markets. So Manhattan, Lawrence, Wichita, those markets have been huge. And I think a lot of that is because of the focus on wanting to drink something hyper-local, but you're also going to college kids that might not have the expendable income that they're able to buy a 6-pack of IPA every weekend or whatever.
Right.
And
right.
So that's why we started doing larger packaging as well. And so we're doing 24 packs right now. But keeping 24 packs at a good price that is similar to the other macro lagers, that gives them an opportunity to still have that pride in their local community.
Yeah.
But not have to break the bank.
How do you, that seems like an impossible job as well. I mean, that's a very, those things are rock bottom prices. I mean, you gotta make something.
Well, that's another thing that the domestic prices, been creeping up the past, you know, whenever I was in college 16 years ago, a 30 pack Keystone Light was $12.99. And now you go to the liquor store and it's $19.99. I was out in the market this morning and Busch Light 30 packs are almost $23 now. So it seems like, you know, everybody's been holding the line with craft and $8.99 six packs, $8.99. Meanwhile, domestic's been creeping up. I mean, they've been taking price increase every year for the past 12 years. So, you know, it is a little bit more easier to hit that line now to be competitive in the domestic market, at least.
That's great. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. Do you so you said that, you know, you're paring your brands down. What brands did you get rid of or maybe put on the back burner or maybe not distribute as much as the lagers? What had to give a little bit for you to move forward with this? Because I'm fascinated with this sort of you know, business plan of let's just push these style of beers, which I love.
Sure, yeah. Some of it was also a discussion of moving from bottles to cans. And okay. So we did start out bottling and then got a canning line. So we've got a rotary canning line, 18 fill heads.
Nice.
So we've got that moving. But the brands that we cut, we had a high-rise wheat. Which was just a standard American wheat. Mm-hmm. We did kind of a standard IPA. That was our Wind Wagon IPA. We had our Aeroplane Pale Ale. What else am I missing?
Locomotion Stout.
Locomotion Stout, Horsepower Red.
Are those?
So we kind of ran the gamut of all of that.
Yeah, so standard, like, you know, brewery fare. Let's just do this down the middle of the road sort of styles of beer. Are those available at the bar, or are they just not distributed?
Occasionally they are. As a matter of fact, we just put high rise wheat back on the bar.
Okay.
But we are running them more as seasonals right now.
Okay.
So
interesting. Okay. So you sort of drop back to like more of the seasonal format and pushing right. these a lot harder.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. And then how has the reception been? I mean, I know distribution wise in liquor stores, it sounds like it's going good, but when people come in, are they like, oh man, I really miss this thing? Or, hey, I'm really stoked that you have more light lagers on.
All the time, it's I really miss this beer. Everybody's got their beer that they miss.
Yeah, and, well, yes,
and
true.
I think that's going to be true whether you have 40 beers on tap yeah. or 3 beers on tap.
I realized just as you said that, I was like, yeah, that's that's probably more true than untrue because it's the same story every time. Anytime someone right. takes one beer off, there's always some dumbass who loves it and it's their favorite.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
But having said that, we also have a one barrel pilot system, and so we're always trying to crank just random beers, whatever the brewers want to brew, we're trying to crank that through. And so okay. there's typically something new every time you come out. But the brewery is also in a town of 1,000 people. And so
okay.
it's typically the same people you're seeing every weekend. I mean, we have some people come from out of town that want to see it. And we especially like to get our distributors out there because they think of a brewery in Washington, Kansas, town of 1,000. You know, they think it's some rinky-dink operation that really is not as sophisticated as we have made it. And so we like to get them out there. But, yeah, for the most part, I mean, I would say Bradford Light, which is maybe another good transition if you want to go there. But Bradford Light is the lighter version of our lager, and it's probably our number one seller at our pub.
That's the other can that I have.
Right.
The yeah. blue can or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's really interesting, man. You guys are like, it's like sales focused. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out what the hell you guys are doing because
it's a little bit deeper than that. I mean,
yeah, for sure. That's what I'm
the American lager. So yes. like, in the 60s, there were Storrs Brewing Company. Are you familiar with them?
No.
Yeah. No one is. No one knows about them, okay. but, you crack a book open on American light lagers and, Storrs Brewing Company was from Omaha, Nebraska. And at their peak, they brewed 1.3 million barrels of beer. And to think about that, most of it was consumed in Nebraska. So whenever I say that,
wow,
you know, at Kansas, they primarily drank light domestic lager, we're talking close to 20 million cases of light domestic lager. It's a lot of beer. And, you know, 50 years ago, everybody was drinking Storrs. And Storrs got bought out by Anheuser-Busch. And they were bought out and immediately closed. So all those liquor stores, you know, they couldn't buy Storrs anymore. So they immediately loaded up on the beers that they could get, Anheuser-Busch beers or Molson Coors beers, whatever. And that kind of killed that regional lager brand. And we want to bring that back in the Midwest.
I think that's cool. You know, like you said, yeah. like Rainier in the Pacific Northwest, Lone Star, Texas has Lone Star. Which right. are both good beers, man. I don't know.
Yeah, it's all, I mean, Yingling for
Yingling. Out loud, yeah, you know? Dude, forget. Yeah, get out of town with that. It's interesting because, you know, when I got into craft beer in the late 90s, it was very much, this is the style that you poo-pooed. You just shit all over it.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Big yeah. time. And it's interesting that it's not.
It's yellow beer, right?
Yeah. Oh, my, dude. Yeah. That marketing, I never been on board with that. But anyway.
It's, I just found out those guys are making seltzer now. So
oh, good.
They
oh,
can't no. use that tagline anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Well, once they pushed out their first lager, it's like, oh, okay.
Right.
But I never understood that because you are isolating a majority of beer drinkers. And I get the marketing. It's very bombastic and very in your face. And that's, you know, right. that worked for like a little bit. But the problem with marketing like that is you built your brand on the thing that now you're doing and they, just this weird circle. But anyway, the like lagers themselves, like, you know, Pilsners and like the classic German styles or whatever, those always seem to be exempt from the hatred of American, you know, not American lagers, but, you know, craft beer lagers. But beers like these were always demonized. And I see them, I don't want to say more and more, but I do see them a lot and they're good. I never, you know, once I sort of opened my palate and my mind to them, I love a Coors. Give me a Coors Banquet. I love that shit. You know, PBR is great. Lone Star, good. Vitamin R. I love it. I don't know. I like it a lot. But, you know, I would definitely support a craft brewery pumping out beers like this over, you know, what do you guys keep saying? Bush Light. Is that like the,
that's
the beer up there?
It's the number one selling beer in Kansas and Missouri.
I think I've had a Busch Light once. In fact, I think that was responsible for the literal worst hangover I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah.
It's like a corn, baby.
Two Sierra Nevada Pale Ales and two Busch Lights. No, ice. Do they do the Busch ice? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah. Yeah, no, man. That's the last time I ever ate barbecue ruffles. In the morning to get over my hangover, and they came out my nose later. Like, it was not a good good look, man. It was very, very bad. But anyways, I digress from that. I mean, I could see that.
Brad's other philosophy is also keeping everything super local and keeping that town of Washington alive. You know, small towns are dying all over the place.
Yeah,
he owns a company called Bradford Build. They're the second leading truck bed manufacturer in the United States. And so he employs, I think, almost 100 people just there in Washington. And he wanted something else that would keep people coming, have them come out and visit. And I remember the first year that I was there, he was so excited because the town population grew by 2 people that year. And that made his year.
Wow.
That was exactly what he wanted. And so that's kind of the flip side. It's a beer for the people that are local. And then if other people like it, cool.
It seems almost too good to be true. It seems like almost too benevolent, right? But right. Because you don't hear stories like that, really. Yeah. You know, like, I own a business that employs, 10% of the population in the town, and I'm going to open another business to give to give them something else to do. Like, that's cool. That's a nice vibe.
Right.
Yeah, I like it. Well, I'll tell you what, guys, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I have the pineapple life coach.
Nice.
All right.
So I want to try that and get your thoughts on that. And then, you know, we'll go from there.
Sounds good.
All right. Hang on a sec, everybody. We'll be right back. We have Kansas Territory Brewing Company on the phone or on the Skype or the, I don't know, whatever. Oh, we'll be right back.
Tuned into the session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
Hey, thanks for hanging around, everybody. We are The Session, and we are speaking with Kansas Territory Brewing Company out of Washington, Kansas. I got that right? Washington, Kansas?
Yep, that's right. It.
Unless you're from there, then it's Washington.
It has to be Washington. So, yeah, it's always... Right. Yeah, absolutely. Anybody from the Midwest says Washington.
That's right.
And the R is more pronounced as you get older, too. Like, my wife's grandma says that. Yeah, and like over and over, like over the years, it's very now pronounced. Because it used to be like, did you say Washington? Or was it Washington? Right. Now it's like Washington. Yep. Like, Tasty would do that, too. Like, whenever he'd say, like, just over the years.
Right.
It would be Washington.
Yep.
Loved it. all right. I don't know why I'm yelling. I'm going to bust up the pineapple life coach.
Let's do it.
Lager with pineapple. So tell me about this. Let me in on this secret of the pineapple life coach.
Well, it's pretty tricky. We take our life coach and we add pineapple to it.
Damn. Love it.
So it's we take puree from Oregon Fruit Company and we actually inject it right before we send it through the centrifuge to pull out some of the pulp and stuff like that.
Okay. It's not in fermentation or
it is not in fermentation. No. So
how do you talk about the roots of this beverage?
Please do.
Yeah. So this beer is inspired by another local place in Manhattan, Kansas. It's called the So Long Saloon and they have a drink that they call the Nancy and it's Milwaukee's best.
I believe so.
Milwaukee's best blended with some Dole pineapple juice. And it is by far their best selling beer.
Stop it, dude.
It's crazy. I'm telling you.
That sounds illegal. I don't know if you could even really do that.
They seat like 55 people.
Yeah.
Maybe. And they're the number one seller of Milwaukee's best in the nation.
Numero uno.
Because they add a little bit of pineapple juice to it.
Yeah.
And so
It's a beer cocktail.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, we all sat down 2 years ago and we talked about whether or not we wanted to produce a seltzer. Okay. Because that was kind of, you know, it was hitting that tipping point where our wholesalers were saying, oh my God, you know, this White Claw stuff, it's unbelievable. You know, we're selling, it's outselling Miller Coors in some of our markets. And we sat down and we decided against doing that because we want to become that lager brewery and re-envision that American lager brewery in the United States. So we decided to toy around with some beer cocktails. So this is the first one that we released, and after some different iterations. But
yep,
okay. That is you know, interesting way to put it, because you know, re-envisioning the American lager brewery, because it is a very romanticized version of American brewing history. I mean, not version. It's just what it was. I mean, pale ale, IPA, they didn't really exist. We were just sort of always making American lagers.
Right.
As a country.
Something you could drink on a hot summer day and you know, not get all squirreled up. So that's what we want to do.
That would be me, dude, 100%. Squirreled up.
My big focus on this beer, and this is going to harken back to another Brad story, but we always want to make sure that our beer is drinkable to the point where when you finish one, you want another one.
Yes, right. That's the
and
goal.
And so when Brad had to give a talk at one of the beer festivals we went to, they paired our life coach with a bratwurst or something. And he had to talk about why they paired it that way and all that. And he stood up and he held it up and he said, if it were me and I had to pair this beer, I'd pair it with another one just like it. Mm-hmm. And then he set the microphone down and walked away. And that was his whole speech. And so when I was developing this one, I wanted to make sure that we kept the pineapple levels to where you could definitely tell it's a pineapple beer.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be overly sweet. It's not going to be cloying by any stretch. And when you finish it, you could still have another one.
So how long did it take you to get that process down? Because for me,
about
I would have
years.
Really? Okay. Because I mean, my first thought was like, let's throw it in the fermenter.
No. Brandon oversimplified it a little bit. It took us a long time to get this into a can.
It did. It was a lot of mixing in pint glasses originally. Mm-hmm. We switched suppliers of pineapple a couple of different times. Oregon Fruit, I know they've been a sponsor of you guys for a while, mm-hmm. But their stuff's absolutely fantastic.
And we
were able to find a way that we could add it and still keep a stable product. And so, it was a labor of love. That's for sure.
pineapple, raw pineapple has a lot of bacteria in it. It's, you know, like whenever you're taking probiotics, if you look on the back, it'll say, you know, that it comes from pineapple or something like that. So, you know, getting a shelf stable beer like this took a long time.
Yep.
Yeah, I can imagine, man.
Yeah.
And how close is it to the drink, to the Nancy?
It's pretty close. Fairly close. Yeah? We did run a growler of it over to them, the first iteration of it that we did.
Oh yeah,
and they said we were spot on. So,
wow.
And then they said they were okay with us producing it as long as we didn't call it a Nancy. So,
yeah.
If you're ever in Manhattan, Kansus, go to So Long Saloon and order yourself a Nancy.
Yeah. But
if you're not. And you need one in a pinch.
That's right.
We've got one.
Yeah, if you're going camping or hiking or whatever,
right?
Grab these. How close is the bar to you guys?
So it's a little over an hour. I actually live in Manhattan, so I commute a little over an hour every day to work.
Okay.
I typically see more deer than cars on my way there, but
it's fucking wild, man.
I can just put it in autopilot and just go.
God damn. It takes us out here in the Bay Area. It takes us about an hour to go like 30 miles.
I'm talking an hour to go about 70 miles. Yeah. So
because I drive 70 miles an hour. And that's right. Why. Yeah. No, it doesn't work that way out here, man. This is an interesting beer. I mean, you call it a beer. I want to, like Kurt was saying, a beer cocktail, but it's not really. It's good. I like it. I don't know, man. It is oddly refreshing. Like for some reason, I don't really think that the pineapple would be, I don't know, would be a good pairing with like a standard American lager. I don't know why. I just never really thought about it, but it sort of works.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I feel about that.
Great for us. I mean, the first year we had it out in cans. So with Life Coach, we have three different packages. We have 6-packs, 15s, and 24-packs.
Mm-hmm.
And we just released this in 6-packs, and it's already overtaken Life Coach Original.
Really?
Which has been, yeah, it's been great for us. And the community's really responded well to it. So
that's weird to me, man. I don't, do you think that that's sort of writing on the wall as far as, you know, you're opening to do more fruited beers like this?
Maybe. So, you know, we look back at like Ballast Point, you know, we brought those guys to Kansas and, I remember I met with their sales team and Earl, whenever we kicked off, and he said, never have more than three types of Sculpin because you get Sculpin fatigue and people stop buying it and they just get overwhelmed. So while we may do another iteration in the future, I think we're just going to stick with what we got going now.
Yeah.
And we do draft versions. I mean, we've had, grapefruit and sea salt Life Coach. We packaged that for some on-premise accounts.
That sounds good, like a little salty dog version of a beer.
Yeah,
or something
salty
like that.
Dog, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's hail back to Oklahoma. We have people that drive from Oklahoma City, which is about 8 hours, up to the brewery just to buy pineapple. So we figured we'd do a salty dog version for them.
I love it. That's cool. Yeah. And then would you just stop doing this one to then do the other one? Because like you said, you don't want people to get tired of it. Or do you have that worked out yet?
We're still in the infancy of Pineapple Life Coach. I mean, like I said, we only have 6-packs right now because our brewery is at capacity, which is why we're building out our new facility, which is much, much bigger than what we have now.
What is your system now? I don't know if we've covered that yet.
So we're brewing on an ABE system out of Lincoln, Nebraska. It's a 4-vessel, 20-barrel system. We're brewing into 60-barrel fermenters.
420 barrels. Okay, 20 barrels. That's nothing to shake a stick at, man.
Yeah. So it gets a little bit tricky when I'm the only one brewing, and that happens on occasion. Okay. And so that's a good 18-hour day. But But that's going to happen every now and then.
Yeah. So you're doing like three turns.
I knew what I was getting myself into.
Well,
when I got
that's
into
true.
The industry.
Yeah, so. That's true, man. That's true. So you're
and
doing
that's
like
one thing I will say. Anytime I interview a new brewer and talk to somebody about coming into our facility.
Yeah.
I spend the entire interview trying to talk them out of it. And if they're still interested at the end of the interview, then they might stick around for a little bit. But I'm going to do everything that I can to talk them out.
What do you do? What do you say? Like, what's like the go-to line? You got to have one go-to.
It's just a lot of, what we all know that brewers do.
Yes. You like cleaning metal.
A lot of, right. You like scrubbing floors. Do you like lifting 50-pound bags over your heads? Do you like, you know, just CIPing tanks and stuff like that? And
yeah,
if they're still interested, then we might have somebody.
Do you ever get people going like, I just want to walk around in boots and drink beer?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting.
A lot of times.
Interesting.
And so, and that's why I know a lot of breweries. I have heard at least that they recommend giving the person you're interviewing a couple of beers and seeing how they are after a couple of beers. I don't want them close to beer because I don't want them to think that that's what we're doing is drinking 3 or 4 beers every day and just hanging out.
But that is a good interview tactic. Like, hey, cause if you don't like the person or if they get a little weird after a few beers, you can't take them to a beer festival.
Right.
Right.
Just there's no way, you know, we've all heard stories about that.
We've all seen that.
Yo, right. We've all been that guy, right, guys? All right. Do you guys have many beer fests out there at your way?
Oh, all tons of them. Yeah, I think the year that I started, Brandon told me, how many did you do? Like 70 in one year?
Something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Really?
70 in one year?
Yeah, he said he did one at least one a weekend for the entire year. And I was like, all right. That stops now.
Yeah. Why? Why
not do that?
Why not?
We still do some of the really cool ones. The last one we did was in Wichita, and it was the Hatch Green Chili Festival.
Yeah.
So everybody brewed a green chili beer.
Okay.
And then also got to bring other beers to pour.
I hope so, because that would be the oddest. Yeah. The porta potties would be on fire.
Right. And it's typically 100 degrees on that day.
It was hot.
Yeah. And so
no,
it's,
man.
It was a little rough, but this year it was actually really nice.
Yep.
And the chili beer turned out good. So
okay. All right. So Kurt, why did you stop that many fests?
Well, we were transitioning what we were doing in our brewery. So
okay.
You know, you essentially, if you can, if for a salesperson to dedicate his time to a beer festival where they're going to an outdoor venue where there's anywhere from 50 to 100 different breweries and trying to remain competitive with the people out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's really difficult to get any sort of attention or anything that grows your business at all. So, you know, we've always kind of made it optional. If the guys at the brewery want to do it and it's a really cool festival that's a nonprofit beer festival, mm-hmm. we will do those. Absolutely. But, you know, there's better, you know, we have families and things like that, and doing a beer festival every weekend throughout the year, that's a good way to burn somebody out.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. All right. I was curious about if it was a sales thing. Cause I know, you know, some people, when they first start, they get inundated with festival requests or beer donations or whatever. And it's like, that's cool. Right. I would love to go to your festival, you know, 50 miles or 100 miles or 200 miles off of where I'm at, but I don't distribute yet. Or right. we don't distribute in that area or that state or whatever. So they can't justify it. So I was wondering if there was some of that too, where it's like, we're not in this market.
Right.
Yeah. There's still the flip side of it where I still fully believe that the only impact you can make on a consumer at a beer festival is within the first 30 minutes.
Right.
Because after that, either their palate is shot or they're just trying to get drunk.
Yeah. Or they want free stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, can I take these pens?
Right.
Can I have more than one? My kid loves ballpoint pens.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I get it. That makes sense to me. So
plus, you know, doing tap takeovers and things like I find that to be much more effective because those consumers do come back. You know, beer festival, they go to the beer festival, they go home, and that's it. You know, you don't see those people. So, you know, doing an event at a bar or a happy hour at a bar, that's much more effective for us. And that money, you know, that stays local. So, you know, we can enrich that venue's customer base, get them drinking something they're not used to drinking. And
that does make a lot of sense, man. I sort of like that idea because, you know, and like you were both saying, if the festival's cool, we'll do it. And I think that sort of puts pressure on festivals to be cool.
Yeah, it should be that way.
Yeah. I mean, the one that we put on, you know, if we ever get to do it again, that's always a good fest because we have good music and a lot of food trucks and the breweries are handpicked and they're all pouring different stuff. And that's a big part of it too, because like you were saying, Brent, you can't just go and be like, all right, well, we have the same beer. Everyone has, you know, four IPAs on, and then you're just sort of trying to steal shit from people.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, and we show up and we pour the three lagers that we sent you, and you know, we'll have people coming up and saying,
IPA. Hey,
can I get an IPA? Or
yeah.
I'm really into dark beers. But what we have found is that the other brewers that are around us, those are the guys that are coming over and stealing Life Coach out of our cooler.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Every time we go to a beer festival, they're like, hey, help me out. I need some beer.
You need
and they want something that they can drink that they just can enjoy but is not going to get them drunk, and they can still sit there and pour their beers. So
we see
Life Coach at a lot of different beer tents.
You know what? And that's great. You almost need like to convert your cooler into like a steam trunk. You know, with like a padlock,
just for show, right?
Okay, but like just for show, like brewers, stop it. There's no, but yeah, and I wonder if that is sort of the, because we talk about every once in a while the rise of the lager, right? The return of the lager, I should say, and I wonder if it's a correlation between the number of brewers that there are, like. You know what I mean? Because it is a brewer's beer, and that's always always what's going to happen, right? If you have a lager on, you're going to get a brewer like a fly just circling around like, hey, is that are you guys? You know, what's the ABV on that? What's going on? But there's so many breweries opening now. I think more people are just like, look, I want to brew this lager. We're going to brew it. We're going to drink it here. People are going to like it. And then that has sort of, I don't know. I'm trying to find an analogy for it, but it's sort of like, I don't know. The courage or whatever. Let's just be really bombastic about it. That someone had the courage. Brewers are having the courage to stand up to the IPA and to say, we're going to do this beer. I don't know what I'm saying, but you know what I mean? It's like there's more brewers.
Do it well and repeat it. Yeah, it's tough.
There's more brewers out there drinking the thing. They're brewing it for themselves. And then other people are sort of like, the consumer is like, oh, I like this too. Please do more.
Right.
I don't know.
But you also, and I think I heard this on the show. I can't remember who it was that said it, but somebody said, if you don't brew an IPA, it's because you hate money.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that is the other side
get
of
it. But
yeah. That's the other side of it, because that's just what it is. But I mean, you guys, I think, are a good example of the caveat to that is know your market.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's not selling, you're doing it and yourself and your customers a disservice by putting out an IPA that's it's been sitting here for 3 months. No one's drinking it.
Right.
That, and we can be friends with everybody. You know, we're not competing with any of the local craft breweries. You know, we want to be friends with them. We'll do collaborations with them from time to time. Mm. So, you know, it kind of opens the door for us that, you know, we can sell our beer to other craft breweries that want to, you know, have a affordable domestic option for their consumers, so that, you know, that group of 10 people that come in, two guys aren't alienated. So,
and especially Life Coach has done really well at other breweries.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to tie up their tank for over 30 days. But they still want to have something that a Bud Light drinker can drink.
Right.
And so they just slide Life Coach in there, and it works out great for them.
Wow. Yeah, what a great Life Coach, more like business coach. You know what I'm saying, guys?
There you go.
It's a good strategy. And, you know, I hate to sort of break it down like that, because in craft, and especially on this show, we sort of talk about the romance and the, you know, the, you know, oh, it's a lifestyle and we do this for the passion or whatever. But at the end of the day, you do have bills to pay and you do have to be smart about how you position yourself within the market. And it sounds like you guys are doing a great job with that. I mean, it makes total sense.
It's definitely a unique business plan and one that has worked very well for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not easy too. I mean, brewing a light domestic lager, you know, it's not as easy as brewing a stout or a, you know, Imperial IPA or something like that. And we've both sold those. You know, I've been in the industry for 15 years. I've sold Stone, Dogfish Head, you know, every brewery across the board. And I love those beers. I love them. But I also love light domestic lagers. I always have. And, that's what we're doing.
I love it. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. I want to drink the last beer. What's it called again?
The Bradford Light.
Okay. We'll check out that. We'll talk a little bit about light beer and all that kind of funky stuff. So hang on, everybody. It's The Session. We're on with Kansas Territory Brewing Company. We'll be right back.
It's time to talk beer and chew bubble gum.
And we're all out of gum.
The Session.
Hey, thanks for hanging around, everybody. We're going to wrap things up here in a little bit, but I'm going to crack open the Bradford Light Domestic Lager from Kansas Territory Brewing Company. See? I'm not a liar. I did it. Tell me about the Bradford, because first of all, this label pretty much rules. That is very, like,
it's got that blue collar, baby.
60s, mid-60s sort of, like, vibe. Because, you know, I drank a lot of beer in the 60s, so I know exactly what that is. tell me about this beer, please.
So, this one, we use rice as an adjunct instead of corn.
Okay.
And so, but still keep it really, really simple. We keep it light. We do add amylase to it at about day 3 of fermentation, so we dry it all the way out. But, yeah, this was a response to some of the brewers that, or not the brewers, but the people that were drinking the beer that thought Life Coach was a little too heavy, which I thought was absurd.
You're got to be kidding me.
No.
Again, it's a Busch Light culture. And so Life Coach is a little bit heavier than that.
Yeah, so, but I mean, I think that these people are, you have to have like the largest population of super tasters in the country, because it's an impossible. I'm a super taster. We've all covered this on the show multiple times.
Right.
Everybody knows about it. Heavy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, also God bless him, because that's great. I love that.
It's hilarious. Going,
I don't really like heavy beers. Do you have something lighter than the standard American lager?
Right. But those are some of the same comments that you get at beer festivals, too. I don't really like heavy beer, so I'm not into those lagers. You have anything else? And
are you serious? What? Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we get some of that.
Do you think that the proliferation of the lager in the Midwest is due to, I don't mean this the wrong way, but the lack of education?
I don't know.
It's just people partially, just don't know about it.
I mean,
it.
There's a lot of people in the Midwest that drink all day, too. I mean, you got to think about that.
You really do have to think about that.
Yeah,
you don't think you do, but it turns out you really do have to think about that.
Mm-hmm. They want to pick up a 24 pack or a 30 pack in the morning, and then that's their day's plan.
Yep, wow. Cheaper than a movie.
So, yeah, hallucinating usually is.
But yeah, I think part of it is a little bit of a lack of education, and part of it is people trying to become educated. And so when they say, I don't like heavy beers, I don't like those lagers, I think they have just heard a beer called a lager before they didn't like, and they just assume that's all the heavy beers, but they're trying.
Okay. Yes.
I'm big into giving people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it sounds like that's probably a lot of what it is as well, because they're using the language that they've heard to describe the beers.
Right.
It might not be the language. Like, we talk about this with Nicole Ernie a couple of times. Is your vocabulary and mine might be different, but we could be talking about the same thing. So it's finding that shared vocabulary and then giving that to the consumer and going, this is what you mean when you say this word.
What was it? It smelled like her uncle's basement or something.
Who knows?
She said something like that.
That's sort of why I like talking about beer, because you can just say the weirdest off the wall shit. And sometimes it sticks. And sometimes people are like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Huh. But then you get that one weirdo going, yeah, it really does smell like your uncle's basement. That's weird. I don't know why. So this is a response to people thinking that Life Coach is too heavy.
Right.
All right.
So the name, obviously Bradford Light. It's a light domestic lager. Bradford is kind of the company that backs the brewery. And so, again, that's the truck bed manufacturing company.
Okay.
So they do steel and aluminum truck beds that are aftermarket that they put on pickups. So
you're getting all the plugs in today. Beds,
farm trucks, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So,
so there you go, guys. If you're driving around with a Bradford, you should be driving around with a Bradford. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Brad
also really wants to put a big focus on the domestic lager truly being domestic. And so not being owned by a foreign company. You know, being obviously we're right in the middle of the United States. And so we're owned by one person. It's a single family operation. But with the other macro lagers that are owned by foreign entities, he wants to be a true domestic lager.
I get that. I respect that. I like the vibe of keeping things local, keeping the money in the community. I mean, that's really the point of you know, small town regional breweries in the first place.
Yep. Right.
You know, I do really appreciate that shift in craft marketing as well. You know, aside from the, you know, like we already talked about the early 90s, early 2000s, where it's like the big, you know, let's make a splash and let's do this and whatever. It's now like support your local craft brewery. Keep your community alive, especially through COVID. I mean, I think that really sort of hit the nail on the head for a lot of people, which is a dark, you know, analogy, but, you know, we got to support these businesses because they won't be around for too much longer.
Yep. And I do think that one of the hardest things I could think of doing right now is creating a Nash brewery. To grow up a brewery that is going to be in all 50 states, that has got to be one of the hardest tasks out there right now.
Do you think you can do that?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, even years ago, we were getting breweries on the show that were pulling back because it's easier to throw the stone, you know, closer to you than farther away. I don't know why I decided to go all Zen right then, but Confucius says
that's right.
It's easier to throw the stone closer to you than farther away. And then he burped and scratched his ass.
But yeah, that's part of what I told Brad when I hired on 5 years ago was that the only way I'm going to do this is if we take care of home first. Right. If we get bigger than that, that's fine. But we need to make sure that home is taken care of first.
Yeah. And it sounds like he was on board with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. He loved it.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like that's his ethos anyways.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does make a lot of sense. You know, you serve your region first, you serve your hometown first, because if you're shipping beer in Nebraska, but your town doesn't have any, that doesn't do you any good. Doesn't right. do the community good.
Yeah. Too. A lot of breweries around here failed because of that. So that's not anything that we ever plan to do.
So, okay. So the beer has rice instead of corn. Is that just the difference between a light domestic lager and a standard? Actually, I don't really know too much about it. Okay. How do you shift to that light category? What makes it light?
The big thing that we did was we did add an enzyme on day three of fermentation. And so we dropped this out to zeros.
Wow.
And so it's 1.000 when we're ready to transfer that over. And so that allows us to use a little less grain, but also keep it super light. And keep the alcohol at 4.2%. So
what's a life coach?
Same, 4.2.
Everything's 4.2.
Yep.
Right.
The pineapple life coach is a little bit below that. I think we list that at 4.0.
Right. Yep.
But really? That's just because of the volume of pineapple that we're putting in it.
Oh, because it's watered not, down.
It's diluting.
Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah, that's a better term than watering down. Oh, you mean that beer right. that you water down, guys? Right. Yeah, give me more of that, down. Please. I do like that you have the fat content on here. That's good. It's less than 0.5 grams. That's cute. But yeah, the calories.
It's got less calories and carbs than Michelob Ultra. So get after it.
Damn, bro. Yeah. For your active lifestyle. Is that on the other cans too? Did I miss it? I don't have the cans here to check, but
I don't believe so.
No, we do not have it on the others.
No, we listed on Bradford because we want to make that kind of our lifestyle brand where, you know, those carb calorie conscious consumers, they have a local option to turn to. I think that's something that the brewing industry as a whole hasn't really addressed yet. And, you know, Michelob Ultra has been trending up double digits for years, triple digits some years. So this is kind of our answer to that as a local option.
How long does a beer like this take to design?
Designing, we did a lot of work on the pilot system.
Okay.
And so we did spend a couple of months on the pilot system, kind of playing around with stuff. But honestly, the first batch that we produced on the production system was spot on, and we just ran with it.
Wow. That sounds pretty lucky, honestly.
It was, absolutely.
Because I think I may have tried to do one of these as an extract kit when I worked at More Beer. You know, early on. Because you know, and it's never going to be this from an extract. Right. It's just not going to happen, right? But that was it. I've never tried to do it because it's like I couldn't do a job like this. Yeah. I mean, I can barely brew a fucking pale ale. Stout, yes. But I can't do it. I can't go any lighter than that.
There are homebrewers out there, and everybody knows this by now, but it's all temperature control.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the vast majority of it, is being able to control your temperature. We knock out at 54 degrees. We let it ferment for 2 weeks at that and then start slowly dropping it down.
Okay, so you just hold it at 54 straight across and then slowly lower it after 2 weeks. Okay. And then how long do you let it sit in there before you're pushing it out?
So it's typically in the tanks between 30 and 35 days. I obviously we're taking gravities every day, and so we're making sure that the beer has finished out before we start any of the dropping. And then we follow our lager schedule as we're dropping that down and then harvesting yeast throughout or dumping yeast, depending.
Okay. Wow. That's crazy. 33 days. Wow. Okay. I don't know why that's like super. And then do you age it in the can, or is it like it's packaged? It's ready to go.
Packaged and ready to go.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. Tell me about the new facility you guys are opening.
That is a big one.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Like we talked about earlier, we were brewing on a 4-vessel, 20-barrel system into 60-barrel fermenters. The new facility is an 80-barrel system, brewing into 320-barrel fermenters. So
80-barrel. Wow. So what is that? 3 turns?
Yeah.
Okay.
Four.
Four.
Yeah.
Whatever. Math is fine.
Yeah. Whatever.
It's all right. It's podcasting math.
It doesn't matter anyway.
So. Yeah, right. For sure. Someone's going to hear this in 5 years and going to come. This is, you said three. And you guys are fucking liars. Okay, so four turns. Wow, damn. Okay,
so four turns, but it does have a mash filter press instead of a lauter tone. And so that speeds up that process quite a bit.
So you're pushing down on the grain bed to squeeze it out?
Kind of. We're pushing sideways on the grain bed.
Okay.
And so it kind of looks like a heat exchanger, but it's like 7 feet tall and like 30 feet long. You push the entire mash into it and hydraulics squeeze it.
Okay. Okay. So Jesus. Okay. So you're pushing the mash from the mash tun via what? What's the mechanism for that? Is it
a big ass pump?
There we go. Okay, so you pump it. Okay, I see. So you don't. This is really throwing. This is honestly the first time I've ever heard of this. So I'm really trying to process it. So it's just like your mash is, you know, the grain ratio, maybe like on a homebrew scale, it's like 1-to-1 or whatever. So it's still soupy. You pump it out.
Right.
You don't drain it first and it's over dry.
Entire mash.
Got it. Okay. Now I'm on
the
board.
Filter press.
Okay. And then it's a hydraulic, so a bladder fills up maybe or something like that. Okay.
Yep.
And it squeezes everything out. So you're not relying on gravity.
Correct. And that also allows us to get a lot more efficiency out of our grain.
Okay.
Because we'll run, instead of running a roller mill, we're going to be running a hammer mill. And so it's going to turn it almost to flour.
Oh, okay.
And then that way, because there's no such thing as a stuck mash when you have a filter press.
Right.
And so when it comes to, you know, anything, whether it's grain that has been ground down that far, or corn or rice or something like that, we're going to be able to get everything out of it. So they tell us, and we still have not run this system yet, but they tell us that we can get upwards of 98% efficiency.
Okay. So. Yeah, you could. Do you think you'll get that? I mean,
I don't know.
90s would be good.
Right. In the 90s. I mean,
yeah, for sure. If you ever hit 98, you should have a party. I mean, that's like, that's insane.
Yeah. And then,
that's wild.
When the grain comes out of there, it just falls out in dry pucks. So.
Oh my God. It's like a espresso machine.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
So, okay. So as a home brewer, you always hear you don't squeeze the bag. And I have always said, you can put me on the record, that doesn't matter.
Yes, I would agree with you.
It doesn't matter. It can't matter, right? Because it's not like you're doing anything on the molecular level that's going to change the flavor of the fluid or extract more. You're not like popping tannin bubbles in the thing. Yes. Whatever's in the water or in the mash is in the mash.
Yep.
People go, oh, well, you squeeze the tea bag. And it's like, well, the tea bag is, you're making green tea at 195 or boiling. That's where your tannins
are
made.
That's where your tannins,
you do green tea at like 150, 160. Everybody knows that. Right.
Yep.
I mean, So it doesn't change the flavor of the grain at all to put as much pressure as it would take to form it into a puck.
Well, we're going to find that out.
Okay. I feel like you should know that beforehand, before Brad spends the money.
Right.
But I mean, you guys do whatever you want.
Research that has been done has not indicated that there's any more tannin extraction.
Okay. Have you seen this?
We are planning on. The only equipment we have to move over to the new facility is going to be our packaging equipment. So we are planning on brewing a batch at the old facility and the new facility at the same time.
Smart.
That way we can taste them side by side the entire way through the process.
Are you going to keep the old facility up and running?
We have not decided yet.
Ah, okay.
If we do, that's going to be a pilot project. And so we could have some 20-barrel fermenters with that system, and that would be our, you know, pilot, draft only, special event, stuff like that.
Yeah, there's more to lagers than light domestic.
That's right. So.
That's true. Yes. Well, okay. So
things like that.
So then your one barrel pilot would sort of be sold off or whatever.
And it still could be something for developing, you know, a new production beer.
Yeah.
We still want to have that available, especially to our brewers. You know, when brewers get into the brewing industry, they typically don't do it, so they brew the same beer every day. Yeah. And so typically, to give them an opportunity to just, you know, take the leash off and just say, do whatever you want to do. And Brad's got a really good philosophy on it. He says, if you are brewing on that pilot system and every 10 beers, we're not throwing a beer away, you're doing something wrong. You're not pushing the envelope enough. So let's figure out what's going on.
Brad sounds like the most benevolent like owner awesome. In the entire world. That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Who would say that? If you're not wasting my money, then you're doing it wrong.
Yep.
I kind of love Brad. I've never met the man in my entire life.
Come He's fantastic.
That sounds really cool. That's great. I mean, that's sort of like carte blanche. So what kind of weird shit are you guys doing out there? You got to be pushing the envelope.
That was said to us about a month ago.
Okay.
So the most recent thing that I brewed on the pilot system, I did an 8.5% Saison, but just a base Saison.
Wow. So, that's a big jump. Is it on draft yet?
It is, yes.
And how's that going?
It's going pretty well. It dried out more than I wanted it to.
All right.
But it was also sweeter than I wanted it to be, which doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
But it's got a lot of big banana clove character.
Yep.
It's going to get some people in trouble if they're not careful. So,
you know what? I get that impression from a lot of people. Like in the Midwest, we have brewers on where you guys like to do these low alcohol beers, and then you have like one that just kicks everyone's ass.
Right.
And then, but you go, well, be careful, guys. You can only have like five or six of these. You can't have. You know what I mean? So it sounds like the same. Because a Saison seems like so flavorful. Not that, and you know, I think you guys, I know you well enough to know that you're not going to take this the wrong way, but these beers aren't super flavorful. They're very flavorful for the style of beers that they are. They're very, very great examples of the styles that they are.
Right. These beers are not designed to be flavorful.
Right. And even though that's the case, you still have flavor in them, clearly, because people think some of them are too dark or too heavy.
Right.
But to go from this to a Saison, I can't imagine that, man. I mean, I'm installing truck beds. What do I know? Right?
Brewing domestic beer. So. Yeah.
Well, then you give me a Saison. I'm like, I think my tongue is hurting. You sprained it. But it sounds like people are open to that.
That is part of that education portion of it that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Where we're introducing new styles to people that don't know how to pronounce Saison sometimes, you know? And
people like
it's been absolutely fantastic. We've had people that have fallen in love with double IPAs or Saisons or even some of the few sour beers that we've done. We've done a few kettle sours and we've had people fall in love with them.
See, and I think that what you guys are doing, again, it goes back to positioning yourself in the marketplace. And I think what you guys are doing, Kurt, especially for you, because I feel like this is sort of your, you know, baby. But you take the lagers, you push those, you reserve the weird shit for for the pubs and whatever, and you sort of grow that organically and then introduce new stuff to the local population who aren't used to these things. And then you can sort of branch out and sort of flex your brewing skills that way. I feel like that's a really good, like you were saying, Brent, it's sort of the opposite of what people would normally do.
I think that's what we want to do. Yeah, you know, we want to challenge our consumers because, you know, if we only had three beers on tap, nobody would come to our bar. You know, they could buy it at a liquor store or a grocery store or whatever. So, we want to keep our brewers happy, number one, and challenge those consumers that make it out to the brewery, but also have something to offer some of our more craft-centric accounts that keep us in cans or have that domestic option on draft. So
I love thinking about a little town in Kansas. I mean, little, it's 1,000 people, but it's still, you know, pretty small. People drinking Saison and, like, discovering Saison for the first time. To me, that's the romanticized version of the American craft beer movement.
Yeah, right.
Is people just discovering these things that have literally been brewed for hundreds of years.
Right.
And then now they're just learning. How do you say it? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the cool thing. And I feel like that's sort of like that heartbeat of the American craft beer movement is still doing these things and still paying tribute to the brewing tradition that has been going on for thousands of years by brewing a Saison, by brewing these other beers. And getting people who would never have access to them to try them.
Yeah.
Right.
When I was on the sales side, we had a guy working for us. He was actually out of Nebraska and running our Nebraska area. And he knew our beer really well, but he was very fresh into the craft beer industry. And I remember him calling me up one day and saying, Brandon, I just found this brand new beer. We've got to brew it. I said, what is it?
Oh, God.
He said, a Saison.
Fuck, yes.
And I said, oh, boy. I said, yeah, I'll brew one of those, but
no problem.
That's not brand new.
Right.
So
I love that, man.
Like you said, it's that education part of it.
Yeah, well, and it sounds like your local population, the general Kansas area, I would imagine, seems pretty into it, pretty happy with it. They're pretty excited to learn about it. Yep. And I don't think you can ask for a better position for you guys to be in, honestly. I mean, you get carte blanche, basically you get blank check to do whatever you want on the pilot system. You have a customer base that's excited to try new stuff, but they're also drinking standard American lagers.
For me,
that's like, I don't know, man. I'm gonna Google image search Washington, Kansas, and see about moving there, because that sounds like it. Man, it sounds like heaven to me. I don't know.
Yeah,
and it's nice because they'll come in and, you know, they'll try the Saison and maybe they don't like it, but they've got that Bradford Light Lager to fall back on after it.
That's what I tell my kid. At least you tried it.
Yep.
It's a comfy couch.
Yep.
That's well, look, man, the Bradford, it's good. I like it. You know, I think. You're definitely capturing that essence of a light lager.
Well, good.
Are you going to ice it? That's the big question that everyone wants to know. The chat's, everyone in the chat's like, ice it.
But I don't know.
I'm kidding. Yeah, I don't know.
25-ounce cans.
Yeah.
Here they come.
Just, fucking 40-ounce. You really should. You really should do a limited run of a 40-ounce of Bradford.
We did one for an April Fool's joke. We had some labels laying around, so we went and bought a 40 and dumped it out, put the Bradford label on it.
You mean drank
it? People went nuts. Yeah.
Did they really? You had to drink it. What was it? Do you remember what it was?
I don't.
I've never had a 40.
Of some sort.
I've had a Mickey's
XXL.
I've had a Mickey's Wide Mouth, like a sip of it one time. I've never had a 40, so I have no idea.
Don't do it. You're not missing out.
Yeah. No. I know Rogue a while ago they did a malt liquor. It was like Dad's malt liquor, right. I think. That was really good. But that's the hard part about being introduced to these, like, urban legends, but they're obviously very real. But these, like, you know, tales of malt liquor and drinking malt liquor outside of the 7-Eleven or shoulder tapping for malt liquor. I don't have that, but you sort of get it from trying a craft beer version of it. Like the Bradford isn't, you couldn't put this against a Miller Lite.
Right.
And say, do these taste the same? No, because the Bradford has more flavor.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's what you guys are going for.
Yep.
And that's what you want. You put the craft in the thing, right? That's what it is.
Right.
I don't know where I was going with that weird, segue, man. But I think that's cool, dude. That sounds like you guys have a pretty good vibe on what's going on. And, you know, I'm reading my notes now that the new facility is going to have a new tasting room and an outdoor patio.
Correct.
Wow. You guys are really building some sort of, destination. All you need now is a hotel attached to it or a couple.
Campgrounds.
Right.
Campground. Is it going to be a campground?
Camping is so big out there, too.
Really?
It's so interesting. When I started working with the tasting room a little bit, we're only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. And Thursday night is the busiest night of all three of them during the summer, which didn't make any sense to me because everywhere I've ever been, it's been Friday and Saturday. And then I realized that everybody's going camping. And so they leave Friday morning, go out to the lake, and then they're not around to come into the tasting room. It's been interesting. But the other thing we are planning on doing out there, so we're going to have some stadium-style seating. We're going to have a stage so we can play live music. But we're also going to be putting a distillery in.
Whoa. So,
yeah.
Oh, now you're talking, baby. Okay.
Barrel track. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. We already got oak barrels coming. So
we currently have 125 gallons still, and we're running rye whiskey wash through it.
Wow.
That was not big enough. So we've got a 2,500 gallon still on the way.
Damn. Pot still, or what kind of still are you talking?
Yep. Pot still.
There you go. That's the way to
sell.
Rock and roll.
Wow. That's wild. Who's heading up your distilling operations? Is that you?
So far.
Okay. But all right.
No, the guy that we just hired, he's super interested in distilling. So, he's still got the GI Bill. He was going to take some classes on distilling. and that will probably transfer over to Shea. So
nice, dude. That's cool. Is it still going to be a Kansas Territory distilling, or is it going to be under a different name?
I don't know that even gotten that far.
We have some label proofs we're working through. We just want to make sure it's right. You know, getting into the spirits games, totally different than beer. That's what I did before I got in the beer industry. So we'll have that nailed down for the end of the year.
Yeah, it sounds like
some time. Aging rye takes a while.
Right yeah, now. Absolutely. And it should, honestly. I mean, because that shit that will light you on fire, dude.
Yep. Right.
It sounds like echoing Jamil's problems too. Opening Heretic, where it's like, or opening the distillery. Like, I don't really know. He's just basically has a distillery, just running stuff, just trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I love it,
just
guys.
A big rye fan. So
yeah.
He said we're gonna make some.
Well, rye for days.
Rye for days. Well, and then you have to do some sort of whiskey barrel aged.
Yep.
Beers, but you know, I wonder. I'm very curious about how that would go down. Like a big, like 11% imperial stout aged on rye barrels.
That would get a lot of people in trouble.
Yeah.
That should be like,
it'll definitely open up some doors for us to do some creative things.
Yes.
So, yeah. Well, we're going to have to invest in some wax so we can get some limited release bombers going or something.
And we've been playing with some barrels so far. We've got our Time Portal, which is our breakfast brown ale. We brew with oats and a little bit of honey. We've got that aging in 4 different whiskey barrels right now. Our high-rise wheat, we aged in a tequila barrel, and so we're going to add some lime zest to that.
Yeah, dude.
And see what happens. But
we've had
some of those other little small batch projects in the work.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I've had a Saison. I think it was from Shady Oak, actually. Uh-huh. It was a Saison aged in, I know it's not typical, but out here, I feel like we're talking about another planet. I don't know why. Forgive me. But, like, you see sometimes barrel-aged gins, which generally aren't barrel-aged, right? But so a Saison aged in a barrel that had gin in it previously.
Yeah.
It worked really well, if you think.
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
That's fun.
All the botanicals.
Yeah. That sounds cool. Well, boys, where can everybody go to learn more about Kansas Territory?
Well, you go to our website, KansasTerritoryBrewingCo.com. That'd be the best place to go. Check us out on Facebook.
Hell yeah.
Where we do most of our posts and everything.
Or come on out to Washington, Kansas.
Yeah.
Yeah, do that.
Airport. If you have a private plane, come on out.
Yeah, I'm looking at like the Google Maps. You know what's weird about your city is that like if you look on Google Maps, over to the right, there's this squarish shape that's separate from the other boundaries of the city. It's like this little tiny line that like divides this random shape from this other random shape that's like by Washington Church. I don't know. It's very weird. East College Street. There's like this little tiny corner of East College Street that's in this like weird trapezoidal. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lake. I don't know. It looks crazy.
I don't know. I'll have to look at it.
There's like a rectangle of blue in this other. Please do. Please look at it. Let me know what you're seeing, because this is, I want to know what's going on. I feel like it's been annexed by like the Illuminati or something like that.
Well, could be. You never know.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah. That's cool, man. It seems like a cool place to hang out. And it seems like the local population supporting you guys. And that's all we can really ask for. You know what I mean? All right, guys, we'll let you split. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Thank you, of course, to our sponsor, More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com. Get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home. You got books. You can make wine. You can roast coffee. You can do all sorts of fun stuff besides just brewing beer. Who would have ever known? Anyway, thank you guys very much. I really appreciate it. KansasTerritoryBrewingCo.com. And until next time, guys, we'll see you later.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.